The following is a lecture by Rabbi David Kaplan. Rabbi Kaplan is originally from Chicago. He attended Northeastern University and received his rabbinical ordination in Jerusalem. He has lectured widely in Israel and America and is currently a senior lecturer at the main campus in Jerusalem.
The mitzvahs are, the claim is, it's officially 613 mitzvot. Now, the goal is to take a few of the basic mitzvot that are have some type of application to us. Most of the ones we do will have practical application. We will be doing a few that don't have any practical application to us at all in theory, in practice. In theory, in the lessons that come from them, they will. But as far as the mitzvot themselves, we will stick with things like, you'll see on the syllabus, the rebellious son, and the paschal lamb, and sacrifices, and things like that, which don't have nowadays. We may get to them, we may not. But most of them will be more or less fairly practical. The first one we're going to start with is honoring parents. And just let me say in advance, the whole idea of examining the mitzvot, it's not going to be a detailed halacha class as much as an overview of the mitzvah, right? As far as what the mitzvah contains. The entire practice of finding the philosophy of the mitzvot, taking a mitzvah and trying to figure out what God had in mind for the mitzvah, it's something that we're required to do. The Torah wants us to do that. It wants us to take a mitzvah, find out what's in the mitzvah, examine the mitzvah. At no point, and this is where we have to be very careful, at no point are we to assume that we understand, that we have understood clearly, we have fathomed the depths of God's wisdom. So if you have a situation where one mitzvah, and the example we always use is shaving with a razor, right, where there's a prohibition in Torah law to shave with a razor. You were given a choice to shave with a razor or eat a piece of pork, so you are much better off eating the pork, because the doesn't mean you should go and do that, by the way. It means that if faced the choice of, in the extreme case, if an anti-Semite were to pull a gun on you and say, Jew, committed transgression, and all you have in one pocket you have a razor, and in the other pocket you have a piece of pork, right? You're better off eating the pork than shaving with a razor, because if you shave with a razor, so there are 5 points on the face that we're not supposed to shave. Right? We don't know where those points are. They are approximately, we have a shear on it coming up in detail, but they're approximately 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We've lost the tradition exactly where these points are. Therefore, according to our tradition, we don't shave with a razor at all. The commentators explain, what's the rationale behind it? Why shouldn't you shave with the razor? You get a closer shave, don't you? Right? Why shouldn't you shave with the razor? The commentators explain that it has to do with, this was the rite or a practice that the idol worshippers would do. They would shave themselves clean as a way of dedicating themselves to their idols. Therefore, the Torah tells us, in order to stay away from the idol worshippers and to distance ourselves as much as possible, that we are to not shave ourselves with razors. What would happen if nowadays the church would pass an edict that all the priests have to grow beards, right, and have payas, right, and wear yarmulkes, right? Well, one of them wears a yarmulke already, but let's say all of them had to wear a yarmulke, right? Let's say the church would pass such a law, right? Then that wouldn't change our halacha, right? We have our halacha already. But when the commentators are trying to find, and it hasn't happened, you know that the Hebrew word for a priest, you know the word in Hebrew is for a priest nowadays? Galach. You ever heard that word, a galach? Galach, legaleach in Hebrew means to shave, and a galach is a priest. The galach meaning the clean-shaven one, right? That was one of their, and that was always the difference between the Jews and the idol worshippers. So just as using that as an example, we try to find what the rationale for the mitzvah is, that it doesn't mean that we have fathomed the depths of God's wisdom, right? So that's the first thing. Now, let's go to...
Sure. I know you said you have a shoe on this, but I just want to ask you because it's relevant. Is there a validity to the opinion that says you can shave with a conventional razor just up to the lower parts of your neck?
Our tradition is we don't use a razor on the front of the neck at all, except when shechting, right? But when shaving, we don't use a razor on the front of the neck at all, right? And the back of the neck is okay, the front of the neck is no good. Okay, that's our because we don't know exactly where the line is, therefore we don't use it at all. Okay, so that is the idea of just as an example of trying to find the ideas, the rationale behind the mitzvahs. Now, this mitzvah happens to be pretty straightforward. First mitzvah we're going to deal with, and I used to do circumcision first, but I like to take a man-to-man mitzvah first. The mitzvahs are broken into two categories. The mitzvah between man and God, the mitzvah between man and man, right? Every mitzvah between man and man is also a mitzvah between man and God. Ultimately, it's a mitzvah because every time you somebody asks you to pass the salt at the table and you pass on the salt, you've done a mitzvah. Now, that's been a mitzvah between you and your fellow man, and that ultimately is a mitzvah between you and God because God commands you. So to a certain extent, the mitzvahs between man and man carry more weight in a certain way than the mitzvahs between man and God. So the first mitzvah we'll deal with is the mitzvah of honoring your parents, because this is what the it is described as being the most difficult mitzvah in the Torah. Therefore, everything else from beyond this point will be a piece of pie, right? This is the most difficult mitzvah in the Torah, is the mitzvah of honoring your parents. Now, the command appears in two places in the Torah. First of all, it appears in the Ten Commandments. And it's interesting because if you ask any person on the street to give you an example of one of the Ten Commandments, right? Any person on the street would tell you, ask anyone on the street, give me an example. They would tell you, don't murder and honor your parents. Everybody knows that. Right. Even one of the politicians here in Israel, when they had the assassination, so one of the politicians in Israel was outraged, and he said, "Look, they were, you know, talk about how the religious community could do such a thing." It was one person, but the religious community could do such a thing. And he was outraged, and he got up and he said, "The first command in the Torah, the first of the Ten Commandments, is not to murder." Right, and everybody, everybody agreed with him, and that's not true at all. Right, and the same man who's yelling about this command about not murdering, he's all of a sudden became very firm about about fulfilling the Ten Commandments. The first command, well before that, is the command that you have to believe there's a God, right? And that you have to keep Shabbos. Right, and so these are also part of keeping Shabbat, or Shabbos, as I pronounce it, and so should you. Keeping Shabbos is the same weight, even more in certain ways, than a command like don't kill, don't steal, all the other ones that are the famous ones. So probably the most famous ones is the most famous is honoring your parents. So it appears in the Ten Commandments. It's number five in the Ten Commandments. It says Kabed es avicha ve'asimecha, honor your father and your mother. That's command number five, is honor your father and your mother. And later on in the Torah, in Leviticus 19:3, there is the command, fear your mother and your father. So there are two distinctions between these verses. There are two differences. So, do you need time? There are two differences between the two verses. The first one says, honor your father and your mother. The second one says, fear your mother and your father. So what's difference number one? Is that the first verse uses the word honor, and the second one uses the word fear. The second difference is what? Who comes first, exactly. That the order is changed. So he spoke about this once, that honoring your father, who does a human being tend to honor more? Naturally, who do you honor more? You honor your mother more. Who do you fear more? You fear your father more, right? Therefore, the Torah always emphasizes the one that we're more likely to not fulfill. Therefore, the Torah says, honor your father and your mother. Your mother you're going to honor anyway. Right? When you watch a football game and they pan in on the player sitting on the bench, right? Who does he wave to? Right? Hi, mom. Right? It's always mom. Right? And there's a certain loyalty to mom. Right? You can insult anybody you want, but not in my family, but not mom. Right? Whereas your father, there's a certain conflict between you and your father. Fathers tend to be less subtle than mothers, right? When a father will say to his son something like, you know what, you are an irresponsible slob, right? And the mother will say, well, you're not too terribly irresponsible, right? Yeah, she'll soften the blow a little bit. There's always a certain soft, again, when we say always and when we generalize, anytime we generalize in the mitzvahs and Torah, there are always exceptions to the rule. On the other hand, the general rule is that the mother is honored more. When it comes to fear, obviously, we fear the strong arm of the law, and that is represented by your father. The expression, when the kids are running around the house, rarely does the father say to the kids, you know, you just wait till your mother gets home, right? That doesn't happen, right? And if it does, there are other problems. But the one that instills the fear in the children, I can tell you from personal experience, that the minute I walk out, my wife is dreading when I leave the house. First of all, because she's crazy over me, but besides the fact is, the minute that I walk out of the house, the kids go wild, right? And they're even asking me as I left tonight if I'm coming home late, right? Because that's a prelude, right? That means if you're coming home late, that means we've got that much more time to go wild, right? I even asked Rabbi Corlin, when I first saw Rabbi Corlin now on the trip, I said to him, how does his wife do it? Because he leaves, his kids know they've got 2.5 weeks of a carte blanche, right? And they run wild. Then the last hour before daddy comes home, I guarantee they're going to be angels. No doubt in my mind, his kids are going to be on the best behavior you've ever seen. So that's the nature. Now, what is the reward for the mitzvah? Before we go into the details of the mitzvah, the reward, first of all, the Torah promises longevity. That means, if you honor your parents, then the Torah promises that mita keneged mita, which is the legal term, quid pro quo, right? Or what goes around comes around, right? So first of all, there's longevity. The Torah promises that we will live longer if we honor our parents, and that has to be put into proper perspective, because a person can honor his parents. The famous story in the Talmud of a father who tells his son to climb the ladder and shoo away the mother bird. The boy climbs the ladder, and then doing what his father told him to do, then he falls off the ladder and he dies. Right, so longevity sometimes could be, or the promise of reward for any mitzvah could always be offset by the punishment for a different mitzvah. So the Torah promises longevity for fulfilling this mitzvah. The fact that somebody honors his parents and dies young does not mean that the Torah was lying. It may mean that there were offsetting penalties. Right, he had on the one hand he got the reward for this mitzvah. On the other hand, he got the punishment for a different mitzvah, which may have carried more weight. What the Torah is telling us is that if all else is equal, the value of the mitzvah, if you're trying to understand how valuable, how precious, what weight does the mitzvah carry? If all else were equal, this mitzvah carries longevity with it. As the guy said in the author of the Guinness Book of World Records, he was talking about this woman who's 120 years old. Interesting. She's the oldest woman in the world, oldest humanoid in the world. She's 120 years old. And he said, this is the most significant record in the book, because all 5.2 billion people on the planet are trying to live as long as possible, right? And this lady's got the record, right? So longevity, when the Torah promises long life, that's something that's supposed to entice us into wanting to fulfill the mitzvah. The second is what I mentioned, quid pro quo, or what goes around comes around, is that if you take care of your parents, your children are going to take care of you, meaning that when the way you deal with your parents, the children are going to learn that lesson from you, and that's how they're going to deal with their parents. So if they see that it's perfectly okay to take dad when he's old and senile, that means he's over 40, and to take dad and put him away for a while, right, because he's too difficult to take care of, then the kids learn that lesson, and then that lesson eventually comes around. The way you deal with your parents, that's what leaves the impression. And what kids learn from their parents more than anything, and this is a lesson that you will learn quickly when you have your own kids, please God, kids imitate their parents, right? Boys especially imitate their father, girls imitate the mother, and kids do not do what they're told to do. Kids emulate your actions. They do not do what you tell them to do, right? Therefore, if they see the way you're dealing with your parents, so it's not going to help that one day when you're old, and you're going to say to your kids, you know what, I'd rather stick around the house than be put away. That's not going to help, because it was okay for grandpa, so it's okay for you too. So that is the second reward. And the reward goes in both there. It's not a question of, I'll honor my parents and I'll get the reward, but you know what, I'd rather not play. You know, count me, deal me out, right? I'm not going to honor my parents, and I don't want to have anything to do with the reward. You know, I'm out of this one, right? The Torah comes along and says, if you honor them, it lengthens life. If one does not honor and respect his parents properly, then it shortens his life, right? So he does not have the choice. One does not have the choice to go to decide that, you know, it doesn't apply to me. Now, the idea, the rationale behind the mitzvah, the basic rationale is, it's pretty straightforward. We understand that our parents have given us the ultimate gift that there is, that is the gift of life, and therefore we understand there's a word in Hebrew called hakaras hatov. Hakaras hatov means literally recognizing what's good. In this context, it means the appreciation of what somebody has done for us. In modern Hebrew, hakarat hatov means appreciating what somebody has done for you. The greatest appreciation that we owe any human being is the appreciation to our parents, because their parents are the ones that gave us life. Therefore, we've got an obligation to demonstrate our appreciation at all times. Now, the ultimate goal of the appreciation to the parents, besides the fact that it's a basic human intuitive reaction that when somebody does something for you, you should pay them in turn, it's ultimately supposed to lead us to strengthening the bond and the relationship between us and God. Because if our parents have given us life, then who's given our parents life? Obviously, God's given our parents life. God has given us life. God sustains us. The Talmud says that the physical comes from our parents. The spirit which is in us, the soul, the neshama, the man's soul comes from God. Therefore, God is a third partner. Gemara says there are three partners in everybody's creation. The Talmud says, when I say Gemara, Gemara means Talmud, by the way, the oral tradition. There are three partners in every human being, the Father, the Mother, and the Almighty. And therefore, he is a partner just like our parents. And therefore, if we can excel or improve our relationship to our parents, that will help serve. Our parents are a physical reminder of God's presence in the world. So if we deal a certain way with our parents, ultimately we'll translate that into our relationship with God. Therefore, the idea is that one should not take God for granted, and one should certainly not take one should also not take his parents for granted. Any questions so far before we get into the technical halachas, which are going to depress you for the rest of the evening? Any questions on the idea behind it? It's fairly straightforward, even among the non-Torah observant world. The fact that it's a command in the Torah, it is still something that is observed by most human beings, have some type of code of honoring their parents.
Does this honoring parents regards to parents?
So that we'll get to. We're gonna get to all of the various combinations, right? You'll see.
Oh, I see. Sorry.
Yeah, it'll be at the end. We're gonna get to that. Any other questions on this part so far? Okay. Somebody once asked, why do I have a debt of gratitude if I never asked to be born? Right? I didn't ask to be born. Why do I have a debt of gratitude? Right? Interesting question. Here I am. Who are you? Right. After all, I didn't ask to be born. The fact that you gave me life, fine. The answer to that is simple. The answer is that right now, what do you prefer? Do you prefer your status quo, which is to be stay alive, or would you like to end it? Right. So if you want to end it, right, obviously you are happier with things the way they are now than before you were alive. Right. Assuming that the person is not avoiding suicide because of his fear, or he's only avoiding suicide because he likes life more than being dead, which most people do, in spite of the trend. Otherwise, most people still like to be alive rather than dead. Therefore, the halacha is that you have a debt of gratitude even though you never requested it. Because right now, what would you do? Right now, are you happy? You are happy. Therefore, you do owe them a debt of gratitude. Now, let's go to the practical applications, which is... beginning with section number 4. First of all, honoring specifically refers to anything positive that you do for your parents. Right? Honor means anything, if you want to say much, anything positive that you do for your parents is in the category of honoring them. The examples that the Talmud uses are feeding and clothing your parents. Right? If your father needs, your father's sitting at the table and there's a tray of food and he wants you to put the food on the tray, on his plate, so you have the obligation to put the food. You don't have the obligation to spend your money on your parents, but you do have the obligation to help them clothe themselves, to help them eat. Anything positive you do for them is in the category of honor. In our day and age, it would apply to things like driving them around, if you have a car available, to drive them, anything you can do around the house, like dishes, writing them, phoning them. If you're in yeshiva, for example, 6,000 miles away from your parents, any similarities to any modern situations are practically a coincidence. But if you're in a yeshiva 6,000 miles away, phone your parents if they want to be phoned. If they don't want to be called because it costs too much, so don't call them. That's the way you honor them. It is a good idea to write your parents. And if it's at all possible, send them postcards or anything else which they might be interested in in seeing that there are some signs of life from you in this in this country, where because they're extremely worried about you. Incidentally, the same way that you had the certain, when you ask your average American, what does he think of the situation in Ireland? Right. Remember, where there's all the, there was one period where there was tremendous fighting going on, and I think in Dublin, right, where there were Belfast, they're bombing every other day. There was a bomb going off. Now, if you ask your average Irishman, right, what would he have told you? Well, yeah, once in a while, you know, that's you know, not so terrible. What do you think of Japan right now? Right? Would you ride a subway in Japan right now? Right? Your average outsider, right? Would you go ride the subway in Japan? Right? After they had the you know, you might be a little cautious. You might you're a little bit wary. I'm assuming that the idea you had of Israel before you ever can step off the plane in Israel, but that Israel, you know, when you get off the plane and you have to duck missiles as you're walking the street, you have to be very careful, right? Your parents think the same thing, and they're worried, obviously, and they have the right to be. You have an obligation to honor your parents by letting them know, by being in regular contact with them, any way that they would appreciate being in contact with them. That's in all seriousness. You're fulfilling a total command by keeping your parents happy and making regular contact with them. When you're around the house, you can do things like doing the lawn or visiting them, or when you're at university, to contact them, come home once in a while for a weekend besides when you need money. All of these things are forms of honoring the parents, and they should all be put into practice. The Talmud also mentions you have an obligation to rise for your parents when they walk into the room. Right? When your father or mother enters the room, then the person has an obligation to stand up, because standing up is a show of honor. So if your parents walk in the room, you have an obligation to stand up. Now, among Ashkenazic Jews, this obligation is only twice a day, right? Unless there are other people around. When it's only you and your parents, then you only have to get up for your parents twice a day, once in the morning, once in the evening. If there are other people around, then for the honor of your parents, then you have to stand up in front of the other people. But among Sephardi Jews, they stand up for their parents every time they walk into the room. Okay? So when you get home from yeshiva and your dad walks into the room, then you have an obligation to stand up. And if your dad, remember, the rule is that any time the parent wants to forego their honor, they have the right to do so. So if your parents say to you, "Don't stand up for me," right, then you don't have an, "No, Dad, I'm going to honor you," right? And you stand up for him anyway. If it annoys him, right, then you should not do it. The halacha is that he's allowed to forego his honor. On the other hand, and I know that I saw a couple of heads nodding, meaning that if your father doesn't want you to stand up for him, so you're assuming that since your dad is cool, right, and you watch football games together, or whatever it is that you do, obviously your dad doesn't want you to stand up when you walk in. You've never stood up before for him, and he never asked you to stand up. Try it. Right? Try it one time when your dad walks into the room. Stand up, and your dad walks into the room, and when your dad looks at you, you're just gonna, you know, all of a sudden you're up. Right? Why? Don't knock over the chair. It doesn't have to be exaggerated. Just stand up for your father and wait till he sits down before you take your seat. And your father says to you, "What are you doing?" And say, "Well, Dad, you know what? I've been thinking about it, and I've realized that you deserve my honor and respect, and therefore when you walked into the room, I stood up." Right? What do you think your father's reaction would be? Right? Huh? Probably. I imagine that you'll hear a loud thud. Right? Because the message he's been getting all the years has not quite been that message. Now, I don't know of any father who is annoyed by it. Right? And I'll tell you frankly that I thought my father would tell me not to stand up for him. He never did. And also, the same type of dad, I thought that I would stand up for him, and he would say, no, you don't have to do that. He never done that. Other things he has done, and I'll tell you about in a second, but as far as standing up, for a parent to see their child stand up, it's a very basic form of respect which a parent appreciates. That's why we will see that one of the prohibitions is to call your parents by their first name. You know, there's a prohibition. One of the things you're not allowed to do, you're not allowed to call your parents by their first name. One of the reasons for it, because we're supposed to maintain a hierarchy it is not a peer relationship. There is one member outranks the other member. That means that your father or your mother outrank you. And the idea of calling, the modern practice of people calling children, calling your parents by their first name, That is a way of breaking down all the barriers. That means, yes, we're all equal over here, and everybody's, you're my peer, I'm your peer. That's why you find certain occasions, the example we always use of bar mitzvah, where the kid gets up, you know, and the kid getting up to make his bar mitzvah speech, you know, in front of 500 people or 300 people, says, yeah, you know, like, I'd like to thank Sally and Jack for everything they did for me, right? And the people are looking around, and Sally and Jack are his parents who are sitting there with him, right? And that breaks down, you've broken down the infrastructure of any type of authority that the parents have over their child. And it's essential that in raising your children successfully, there should be some type of authority system in the home. Therefore, that they are not on the same level, and the child has obligation to stand up for his parents. If you ever go anywhere with your parents, they have to enter first, right? Your father enters room first, your mother enters room first. Many of these things are obvious, but for certain people, they're not as obvious. Now, that is as far as the positive. That is, those are the positive obligations to our parents. What about fear? So fear is the word that the Torah uses for yirah. Probably more accurately than fear would be awe. Right, that we have to be in awe of our parents. Now, this is something that we have to feel inside. Right? That means we have to actually feel. When our parents are around, it's not just something that we are going through the motions. We actually have to think to ourselves that we have this obligation to be in awe of our parents and to honor our parents. Right? We have a certain obligation to feel that we are not their peers. Therefore, it's something that each individual has to practice for, so it's a good idea on your own to go through all these activities just to make sure to instill in yourself these emotions. Now, first of all, you are not allowed to sit in your parents' permanent seats. If your parents have permanent seats, a seat that they like in the house, you are not allowed to sit in their seat without their permission. If the father in a Torah observant home, in a traditional Orthodox home, the father generally occupies a seat at the head of the table. Right? That seat is off limits for the kids. Right? The kids have to understand that they're not allowed to sit in Tati's seat. You are not allowed to, I say Tati, it's the Yiddish spin-off of Dad, right? So that is, number one, you're not allowed to sit in Daddy's seat. Number two, which is probably one of the most difficult mitzvahs in the Torah, in the most difficult mitzvah, this may be the most difficult of all, which is you are not allowed to contradict your parents. Right? If your parents say something, you are not allowed to contradict them. And the commentaries say, the halachic authorities say, because the most common question asked is, let's say your dad states an opinion. How many of you are from New York? Right. Good, I'm glad you guys admitted it. Right, you're about to take a beating. How many of you, let's say your dad says something like, the Knicks are better than the Bulls. Right, which is obviously, it's almost blasphemy, right? It's practically, right? Your father makes a statement which is obviously incorrect, right? I'm from Chicago, by the way, if you didn't pick that up. If your father makes a statement which is obviously incorrect, even then you're not allowed to contradict him. Even if it, especially in an area which is trivial, where it does not have any type of bearing whatsoever on anything important, you are allowed to, you have every obligation to not contradict them. Now, when it comes to more important things, we'll see in a second. But as far as the trivialities, and this is, because anytime you speak to your parents, every time you have a conversation with your parents, right, your father may state an opinion, says, gee, you know, I think, you know, it looks like it's going to rain today. And you're looking out, you know, you're in Arizona in summer, right? It doesn't seem like it's going to rain at all. Right? Doesn't matter. You are not allowed to contradict. As ludicrous as a statement is, you are not allowed to contradict at all. So now, what happens when your father wants you to contradict? If your father wants you to state your opinion, then you have an obligation to do so, because that's the way you honor your father. Your father says, when you have an opinion, I expect you to state your opinion. Then you have an obligation to state your opinion the way it is, although it has to be done with a standard respect. Not calling your parents, we skipped one. Now, number three is a little more subtle. If your father is arguing with somebody, and you're standing watching this argument taking place, right? I'm using father as the example. It all applies to the mother also. If your father is arguing with somebody, you're watching the argument taking place, are you allowed to step in and say, you know what, I think that my father's right. I think that my father's actually correct. Right? Are you allowed to state your opinions? So the halacha is, no, you are not. Even if you are supporting your brother, certainly you're not allowed to go in and take sides with the other person against your father. You're not even allowed to support your father's opinion when your father is around. Why not? Anybody know why not? Because by doing, you would think, well, maybe, you know, it's a good thing. After all, I'm supporting dad. Why can't you?
It looks like you know more than your father.
Exactly. It looks like you are a significant person, right? By you putting in your 2 cents, it makes you look significant compared to your father, and the entire theme of the mitzvah is that you are insignificant. Therefore, you are not even now. If you know your father, that your father would like you to speak up, then you do have an obligation to speak up. But if all is equal, then you should not. We mentioned already that you're not allowed to call them by name, and you are certainly not allowed to talk back to your parents. That includes when your father says something to you like, why don't you go out and wash the car? Right? Or why don't you take the garbage? Why don't you do the dishes? Whatever it is that the parents ask, not only you're not allowed to make some type of smart comment back to your parents, right? You're not even allowed to mutter it under your breath. Right? And more than that, you're not even allowed to think it. Because any type of clever rejoinder which you're thinking in your mind is an act of disrespect. Therefore, one must make every effort to try to control that. Any questions so far? Yeah.
Yeah, I have a question on the contradiction.
Yeah, I figured there would be, yeah.
What if it's a fact that's obviously wrong and it could affect someone? I mean, the example I just thought of is, if your father is giving someone directions and it says, go north on the highway.
Yes, then you could, without making your father feel bad, then you would have to counter. You say something like, well, what my father meant was, go south on the highway. Yeah,
please turn the tape to the other side.